welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to this edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report. If you're just joining us now, we just had John Robertson on with Alex Wilson from Precious Timber, and they were talking about business opportunities and living opportunities in Nicaragua. Now we have Debbie Bacigalupi with us, and we're going to be talking about Agenda 2030, the United Nations complete assault on our freedoms, from our land to, you know, our constitutional rights and much, much more, putting us under the oppressive tyranny of a green agenda.
But boy, first, it just keeps getting bigger and bigger. You know, it keeps growing, that agenda, which is why, folks, in my office, I play whole tones all the time. You know, music is one of life's greatest pleasures. It has tremendous power, the power to bring a tear to your eye or to quiet a racing mind. Music has also the power to heal. It does. And it's been used throughout the ages to treat depression, to create energy, to induce sleep, to relieve chronic pain, reduce stress, and even cure diseases. And now, musician and author Michael Terrell has created Whole Tones, the healing frequency music projects. These frequencies were studied in the music of King David and believed to have astounding healing effects. Now you can benefit from this revitalized ancient healing music therapy, folks, by simply listening daily to this music in the comfort of your own home, your car, your office, just like we do. It's well into 2017. The news is just coming fast and furious. Folks, reward yourself. Calm yourself. Inspire yourself with the gift of healing and transformation. Don't miss this opportunity to get an absolutely free sample of this music so that you can begin benefiting right away. You can support this broadcast, support this show. Go to wholetoneslive.com and get a free sample of these soothing, relaxing, revitalizing musical tones. That's right. Go to the URL, wholetoneslive.com today. And I'm going to spell that for you. W-H-O-L-E. That's whole, like entire. Wholetones, T-O-N-E-S, W-H-O-L-E, T-O-N-E-S, wholetoneslive.com. That's wholetoneslive.com. One more time, wholetoneslive.com.
All right, joining us now is Debbie Bacigalupi, and we're going to be talking about Agenda 2030. Debbie's been a guest on our show before. She is the senior editor for Patrick Wood's Technocracy News.
And Technocracy.news.
Technocracy.news, thank you.
You know, Joe and I were talking earlier. She's one of our favorite guests because she knows so much about this. When I say favorite guests, but they're all great, but Debbie's got this tremendous insight with respect to the larger, I like the big pictures, and she's got that big picture approach. Go ahead, Joe.
Let's bring Debbie on. Debbie, welcome back to the Hagman and Hagman Report.
You can say favorite guest anytime you want. I will not balk at that. Good to be with you both again.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because what we're seeing play out, I mean, the minutia of the news headlines compared to the larger agenda of the globalists, people get caught up in the minutia. They don't look at the bigger picture. You've got your finger on the pulse of the bigger picture. And it's my understanding, Joe told me you just got back from
the International Climate Change Conference.
Yeah. What's up?
I did. It's, you know, there are some great conferences that are, I would say, in our camp. What's our camp? Our camp is we want the truth. And if, you know, the truth was that actually, yes, there is global warming and man is responsible, I believe that we are the type of people who would do something about it. We just wouldn't be squawking about it, and we would actually change our lifestyle in order to save planet Earth, which is not what Al Gore and Leonardo DiCaprio and Barack Obama and the Clintons are doing. In fact, they're doing exactly the opposite. They're in continuing to be in accumulation mode. I can't, you know, planes and money and speaking engagements and huge carbon footprint. But I think that, you know, the people in our camp, the people who want the truth, who will study and put their own money forward and their own time forward, those are the people who were at this conference in Washington, D.C. last week. And oh my gosh, these are the guys that I not only went to the 2012 Rio Earth Summit in Brazil, you know, the 20-year reunion of the global signing or the global announcement, the promulgation of United Nations Agenda 21 Sustainable Development. So in 2012, I went to the Rio Earth Summit with some of these guys, and then we went to the 2015 United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change, the Paris Agreement, that everybody knows about and is hearing about. And if you haven't, just think about how are you going to change your life to be a sustainable development global citizen, that you must drastically change your life as a global citizen to maintain the Earth's temperature based on the Paris Agreement within 2 degrees Celsius or about 3.2 degrees Fahrenheit. And how do you do that? You live a sustainable life, like a good human being, any good human being would do. You walk, you bike, you take public transportation. You don't consume. In fact, you underconsume. You only use your basic needs. You don't go above and beyond. You don't do what they call Earth overshoot. Earth overshoot is how many Earths does it take for you to live based on the resources that you use and the resources that you need, your homes, your cars, your clothing, your Louis Vuitton bags, your meat-consuming ways. How many Earths will it take in order to fulfill your lifestyle as a human being? So, you know, these are people, if you're going to, you know, be one of these good global citizens, you would definitely want to reduce your Earth overshoot. And, you know, so that's how we would be living if we actually believed in the mantra. We would be reducing. We would be doing the things that, you know, that taking those steps. Well, these conferences and these guys that I go, you know, are going to these different conferences with, they just held their 12th annual international conference on climate change. So we have the International Panel on Climate Change, which you know is the United Nations. Well, Heartland Institute, CFACT, a Center for a Constructive Tomorrow, CFACT, CEI, which is, CEI, I can't remember what the acronym stands for, but that's Myron Ebel. Myron Ebel was tapped by Trump to possibly direct the EPA. Myron Ebel said, no, I'm not going to direct the EPA. I could actually do more good outside of working for the federal government and continuing what I'm doing to expose all these, you know, all this climate change, global warming, hockey stick stuff. Also at this conference, so these guys, so lots of little things that I just threw in there. One, the guys that have, and it's mostly men. There's, I think I may be the only female for the most part who has consistently gone. So mostly these men who are eager to get the truth and let people, educate people on the truth and to actually give them insight into what happens in the United Nations, what happens in the meetings, what their ultimate goals are in these United Nations meetings. They like to have fun. Craig Rucker, Mark Morano, who's often on CNN and Fox News, Al Jazeera TV, RT, a bunch of others. He's just all over the place. He would love to debate Al Gore, but Al Gore just will not debate. But what they do is they go to these conferences and they get themselves kicked out. How? Well, they're just, you know, they're active. They're in their face. So what happened at the 2030 conference that I did not go to, the most recent COP meeting, both Craig and Mark, who are friends of mine now after these battles, they took a cutout, a human-sized cutout of Trump to this United Nations conference. And in the media section of the conference, they also, so they had their big Trump cutout. They also had a paper shredder, and they took the Paris Agreement and shredded it, which is absolutely hilarious, and they got kicked out of the meeting. In fact, they got kicked out in the desert, and they told me that they had to walk an hour because of the security and stuff, walk an hour to get back to where they were no longer walking in sand.
Oh,
but
my.
Lord Christopher Monckton was at this just this conference that I was just at. So it's Craig Rucker, Mark Morano, Lord Monckton, Dr. Willie Soon, who's an astrophysicist. I met him at the Paris conference. Just hilarious. So these guys like to, and there's tons. There's not just that few. There's, you know, a good 40, 50 of these scientists who regularly show up. These scientists and these activists are people who truly believe that science is not settled. And if science were settled, there would be no reason to study it anymore. Yet, you have all these climatologists from the United Nations studying climate change. If it's settled, then why are we even messing around with studying anything at this point? You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
So anyway, this conference was a hoot. I had a great time. I met one of the leading zoologists on polar bears. So there's only a few scientists who actually study polar bears. And Susan, I think it's Crockford, Dr. Susan Crockford, was one of the presenters at this conference, this International Panel on Climate Change conference, and or International Conference on Climate Change. And she, her studies have been unreal. Like, we hear polar bears are disappearing. They're actually thriving. We hear that they can only, you know, they can only survive on thick ice, and that's the concern about the Arctic melting. And she's like, no, they can survive on, you know, they can walk on, you know, thin sheets of ice. They can swim for hundreds of miles, and just extraordinary animals, but they're thriving. They're not disappearing. They're thriving. And someone asked her, do we need to worry about the polar bears anymore? And she said, no, absolutely not. It is for people to go around and say that, you know, the polar bears are going extinct and we need to study and spend any more time on polar bears. She says it's absolutely ridiculous when it comes to, you know, the population of the species.
All right. All right.
Check it off
just,
the list.
Yeah. Okay. That's good. Wow. What a relief. All right. Because that was, I was sleepless over that. All right. Sorry.
Well, she's written a book, and she's written a book for children, and she's written a book for more of adult learners. And I recommend people should get them, because that is, you know, when it comes to global warming and having a poor little puppy in the window, they use the polar bear. So it's Susan J. Crockford. She does not know that I'm doing this, by the way. She probably wouldn't remember me if I introduced myself to her again. But anyway, Susan J. Crockford, C-R-O-C-K-F-O-R-D. And her, you know, just extraordinary that we have these scientists who actually care enough about the truth that they put their own money and efforts and time, not expecting anything back except for, you know, just an audience that is going to help them get the truth out. And so just awesome. It's just an awesome conference. Thanks for asking about it. Heartland Institute, I think it's a decent organization. And like you guys, I research these organizations. I have huge concerns about most of them, where I would not tie myself to organizations. But Heartland's a good group of guys, and hopefully we can keep it that way. Because we know that everything from Farm Bureau to cemetery boards has been infiltrated by people who think that communism and socialism is a good thing.
You know, it all goes back to, really, it all goes back to this communist agenda, doesn't it? I mean, that's what it is. It's we, the peasants, are going to be living in container houses. That's, or at least that's what they want. You know, no longer am I going to be able to live in my 12,000-foot wood-burning fireplace house, mm-hmm. and driving my Bentley.
That's a big carbon footprint, you know, Doug.
Yeah, I know. Shame on me, right? But we're all, I mean, the objective here is to create just this,
it's a plan of total control. It's a recipe for global communism and socialism under a false a narrative of, you know, being for the earth. These people don't really care to take care of the earth. These people want control over it and the resources, and that goes with for the people who live on the earth as well. And this is what we're fighting against.
Limousine liberals are the most, what would you call them, I don't want to say, it's not schizophrenic, it's hypocritical, I suppose. We can fly in the jets.
Oh, God, you nailed it.
Leonardo DiCaprio is a great example, and Paul Joseph Watson has done some videos on this. But, yeah, he has these, he'll speak at events warning about the dangers of global warming, and he's a big advocate for, man-made climate change, carbon taxes and whatnot, but he'll fly his, hairdresser 9,000 miles to make sure his hair looks right for the Oscars, or while giving a speech on the dangers of overfishing in the ocean, serving whole fish to each individual person who bought a plate for $10,000. I mean, the hypocrisy is just so in your face.
It is so in your face, and yet there are so many people who give them, Al Gore, DiCaprio, Obama, using, Air Force One to go on extravagant vacations. There are people who give them a pass. And when we were, when I was working on a documentary with an extraordinary human being, J.D. King, he's done a couple documentaries. The first one, which is where I found out about J.D. King, is called Crying Wolf. And as a cattle rancher from Montana, not far from Yellowstone, he started to get a taste of or hear about the wolf issue, and JD, I think, is probably 24. He did this film when he was 18. So what he saw on the ground was very different from what he was reading or hearing about on TV. So he decided, the public deserves the truth on what's happening, because the wolf populations were growing. They're introducing them. They're bringing them into Yellowstone. They say this is all about ungulate control, hooved animal control, because the ungulates, they're killing all the specific grasses and important grasses, and they're fording through the rivers, and therefore the rivers are widening, and therefore with widening of rivers, the water quality is less in these rivers for the trout and for whatever species they want to come up with. So as JD started to discover what the truth was about these wolves, was in fact that they weren't impacting anything but the population of these animals to the point of decline, to where the animals that were being blamed, the elk and not so much the bison, because Ted Turner owns bison, so we certainly can't attack Ted Turner's pet project bison. But we're going to attack the deer, and we're going to attack the elk, and these kind of ungulates. And so what they've noticed, what he noticed, and he started reaching out to other scientists like Dr. Charles Kay, who had done studies on the grassy areas of some of these river systems. And I don't know exactly where, I can't be so specific, but just all that to say, go watch Crying Wolf. It's amazing. Amazing, amazing documentary. But what we're being told about the impact of ungulates on planet Earth, like the destruction, was actually not true in Yellowstone. And they found areas that even if they remove the bison, or they remove the elk, or they remove the deer from these certain particular areas along the rivers, that these grasses were not growing as they had predicted. Through their computer modeling, right? They did all this computer modeling, spent all this money to say, if we can control the elk and the deer population in Yellowstone, then we can see this ecosystem balanced again. In fact, there's another movie out there, I don't remember what it is, but it's about rivers and how wolves help balance the ecosystems and help rivers run wild. Well, the problem with the wolves is, they carry all sorts of diseases. They breed like you wouldn't believe. You cannot control wolves. They hunt at night. They actually attack human beings. They hydatid disease, for example, is there. If you are walking a trail, let's say in Yellowstone, there's a wolf scat. In that wolf scat are spores that when you walk, past, you happen to kick this, whether it's dry or not, Wolfscat, the spores are released in the air. You breathe them in, you can have Hydatid disease. And it's cysts in your body. They are finding them in elk. They are finding them in deer. They're finding them in species. They're finding them in human beings. And it's deadly. So they're releasing these wolves that are from Canada or from Mexico. They collar these darn things. They pierce their ears. And then you have the pro-wolfers. I've seen this for myself because I also worked on a documentary, and it's called Wolves in Government Clothing. And so we were interviewing people, pro-wolfers is what we started calling them. They've got these full-on ham radio type contraptions with metal and aluminum and these long antennas, and they know these wolves by name, and they track. These are just, you know, these are wolf enthusiasts. These are the enthusiasts who show up to meetings where, you know, they're yelling at us ranchers and farmers saying we should be shot when we're, you know, saying we don't want wolves on our land. They're going to kill our cattle. They're going to kill our dogs, which is exactly what they're doing. These wolves are dangerous. They are much larger than the wolves that we used to have in the United States. They're huge. They're up to 180 pounds. And they're dangerous, and we are not stopping the wolf population right this very second. And I'm so mad about this. Right this very second, the wolf population is growing. Why? Because these animals are hard to control. They're hard to control. They hunt at night. You can't be going around shooting at night, shooting in the dark at things. We're seeing, and so in California, why I'm so peeved about it is we keep hearing that there's wolf packs that are now coming into California, or they disappear. So when it shows up in a newspaper article here in California, Northern California, we'll see, excellent, the wolves are coming back. Well, those wolves were never here in the first place. But, the wolves are coming back. And then when they disappear, nobody can find them, even though they're collared and GPSed, and supposedly fish and game can't find them. But we know that they're probably chipped as well, you know, like a dog chip. So then you get a news story in the newspaper saying, oh, well, the Shasta pack disappeared. The first pack in California after 100 years has now disappeared. And then you start to see, oh, well, the Department of Fish and Wildlife doesn't know if the ranchers and farmers have poisoned these wolves or if they're shot. Okay, they've been tracking these wolves now all of a sudden, but here's my point, is that they're just blaming. They point their fingers back at the ranchers and the farmers. It's always, you know, going back to the ranchers and the farmers because we're such horrible, awful people, according to, you know, these pro-wolfers and Leonardo DiCaprio hypocrites. And so anyway, I don't know where I was going with that, but I hope wherever it went, I entertained all your listeners.
Well, I don't know, but let's get Leo on the phone. I want to do a bare knuckle fight with this idiot. Is that allowed? I mean, seriously. Wow.
Well,
okay.
Well, they are, as Joe said, they are hypocrites. And I taught today, I've been teaching all this week, and with my family, we, as cattle ranchers, and cattle women, one of the things that we love to do is teach elementary school students about agriculture and how important ag is to their life, which you've heard me say before, that in modern day society, it is absolutely impossible for anyone living in modern day society who uses any modern day equipment, instrument, whatever, it is impossible to be vegan or vegetarian. You may not put it in your mouth and on your tongue, but let me tell you, all vegans, Pamela Sue Anderson, or what's her name, Pam Anderson from PETA, I won't say what I was going to say. Hypocrite Pam, you know, who goes around saying, you know, all about animals and we need to protect these animals and be vegan and vegetarian and don't eat beef. She's using consuming. As soon as she starts slapping on that heavy makeup that she wears, she is wearing livestock byproduct. As soon as she gets in her fancy sports car and drives down to Beverly Hills to buy her next Louis Vuitton, whatever, she is using livestock byproduct, not only buying the leather, whatever she buys, but also tires have fatty acid in them in order to keep their shape. Asphalt in order to keep it bound, and you know, Elmer's glue. Elmer is a cow. There's a hint there. There's a clue in the glue, and the clue is Elmer is a cow, so therefore there must be something within the cow that helps make glue, and that is absolutely true. So you've got a clue with the glue, and it's true. So anyway, so all these hypocrites going around saying we need to be a vegan society, you know, to save planet Earth, they're just simply hypocrites. And that's where I think we can do some serious go to work on debunking and just showing the ludicrousy of this, you know, radical green collectivism movement. I wouldn't just add communism. It's collectivism at the ultimate level, at the scientific level, at the artificial intelligent level, where, you know, we go around with our smartphones and we are constantly bowing our head to the god of technology.
Yeah. Good point. All right. Where does President Donald J. Trump stand on all of this? Do we know yet? I mean, it's only day 70 of his presidency, but do we have any good indication as to where he stands on this insanity? I ask that kind of knowing the answer, given his, you know, but I don't know how many people.
I bet you we feel the same way, that jury's out. Jury's out,
you know,
on Trump.
It seems to me it wouldn't take much to knock this Agenda 2030 movement down, or at least get it out of the United States, or get it out of government, or at least gain some ground on it in the battle against this agenda.
I think it's almost impossible. Here's why. Because the 2030 agenda is infiltrated into major companies like Walmart, Disney, Walt Disney, Coca-Cola. If you look up, if your listeners want to check this out, I think it's called the Business Council on Sustainable Development. The Business Council on Sustainable Development is what I'm pretty sure it's called. But you can look up 2030 business. These are search terms. 2030 agenda, U.S. business, Walmart, and you're going to find just a plethora of information on how these U.S. companies are helping to achieve the 17 sustainable development goals of the United Nations. So, for example, Walmart. So how could you get the 2030 agenda out of the United States? And I said, I think it's pretty impossible. You would have to have a massive campaign to stop people from shopping at Walmart, for example. And I don't know how you do that, especially as Walmart is expanding. It's moving into more rural areas, destroying mom-and-pop shops. And when those mom-and-pop shops are gone, and this is happening where my parents have their ranch in Northern California, and now that Walmart is now, you know, they have their whole organic food section. And so we're seeing grocery stores now collapse in rural America. And where everybody goes to shop now, they have to. They have no other choices except for, you know, maybe they want to drive their car 3 hours up to, you know, into another state and purchase food, or, you know, 3 hours south or whatever, wherever they need to go to simply shop and not rely on Walmart. This is, I'm looking at from the Business Council on Sustainable Development. I'm looking at one of their, and it's in my presentation, so I don't have the link on, I can't tell you specifically where to go, but if you put in these search terms, you're going to find it. Here is goal 12.8 of the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals, or 2030 Agenda, by the year 2030, That's why they call it agenda, the 2030 agenda, because these goals are to be completed and finalized by the year 2030. Ensure that people everywhere had the relevant information and awareness for sustainable development and lifestyles in harmony with nature. Next, you see Walmart. Walmart has worked with more than 100 suppliers, several leading NGOs, non-government organizations, and the scientists at the Sustainability Consortium, TSC. So a listener could look up the Sustainability Consortium, for the past several years to build the Sustainability Index. It's a tool that gathers and analyzes information about a supplier's approach to monitoring and managing social and environmental impact across the product lifecycle. Let me read that again. The Sustainability Index, it's a tool that gathers and analyzes information. So gathers and analyzes information on sustainability. So what? So are they collecting and gathering information on what? So first of all, what products are sustainable? When they were manufactured, what sustainable practices were used? And then they'll go on further, and I can keep on reading this so that you can see the big picture in this. But their ultimate goal is to teach and train and nudge human beings into being sustainable human beings through their consumptive patterns. It says this in the goal, target 12.8, by the year 2030, ensure that people everywhere have the relevant information and awareness for sustainable development and lifestyles in harmony with nature. In other words, you are a sustainable development citizen, and you are marching to the tunes of being a sustainable development citizen. So let's see. It goes on to say, Walmart is putting the tool into the hands of our buyers and suppliers in the U.S. and piloting, so right now they're piloting it in Chile and Mexico to drive continuous improvement and identify hot spots for special initiatives such as factory energy efficiency and fertilizer optimization. Walmart is making information from the index available to the public in the Sustainability Leaders Shop at Walmart.com. So you can go to the Sustainability Leaders Shop at Walmart.com so that you can be a sustainability leader and buy products that are sustainable. The site describes the major hotspots affecting more than 80 product categories and showcases suppliers who score the highest on the index in each category. By the end of 2017, they'll buy 70% of goods by the end of 2017, they'll buy 70% of goods in Walmart U.S. and Sam's Club U.S. units only from suppliers who use the Sustainability Index to evaluate and share the sustainability of their products if they produce goods in categories where the index is currently available. Each merchant will have sustainability goals tied to his or her performance objectives, and we will use the index as the primary tool to measure progress. Currently, nearly 1,300 suppliers of Walmart are using the Sustainability Index to evaluate the sustainability performance of the full life cycle of their products, accounting for 65% of Walmart U.S. sales. Walmart is rolling the Sustainability Index out for Sam's Club suppliers this year in 2017. And so by the end of this year, they want this completed. So can you see where they're going with this?
Well, yeah. And I don't like it.
And that's just Walmart.
So many questions, so many directions to take this. That's just Walmart. How did they get so brawny in this fight? Walmart.
Well, it's Coca-Cola, it's Pepsi, it's okay. Johnson & Johnson. I'm just trying to remember
Okay. All right. So
here's what I think.
Walmart. Go ahead. Yeah.
Here's, Yeah, here's what I think. They all have lobbyists, right? And the lobbyists go to Washington, D.C. and say, and have all the money, right? These guys, they have PACs, PACs, you know, political action committees.
Sure.
They have funds. You know, these mega corporations have so much stinking money that we all know that they are, and the CEOs and the people involved and the VPs and on and on and on, have major influence on politicians. And our politicians need their money. Our elections are so expensive that, you know, right now Congress people are already campaigning for their next election. They have to be. They spend most of their time trying to, you know, collect money for, according to the politicians I've talked to, the Congress people I've talked to prepare for the next election, especially as, you know, Washington, D.C. is so broken and people are getting more mad and angry and seeing their freedoms and their liberties disappear. So now these politicians are feeling more threatened. Well, how do you not be so threatened? You've got to pay to play. And so what I see happening, and this is just my guess, this is just my guess. I could be completely wrong, but I don't think I am. I think there's so much money involved in our political process now. The threat is high for these career, well, not so much for the career politicians, but anybody who wants to break in and disrupt Washington, D.C. We haven't seen much disruption, have we? Even with Trump in office, there has not been that much.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there's just this crazy world of they're protected. I mean, here we hear these politicians hate each other, and then we see them out playing golf together. I mean, how does that happen? The name calling and the flinging back and forth, and then they're all like patting each other on the back and saying, "Yeah, we get along great after the election's over. Yeah, we're really good." Are you kidding me? Like, we're not that stupid on the outside. But anyway, so you've got this big money. You've got these lobbyists who are going to bat for these companies. You know, compare it to a small farm and ranch like my parents. If we have a bad product, we get sued, we can lose everything. If Walmart has a bad product, they get sued, and what happens? Most of the time, they settle out of court. Their name isn't brand, you know, hardly touched, because they have the money to pay people off. And I see that people are being paid off to push this thing. So when you have lobbyists and you have lobbyists saying, okay, so where is regulation going in the future? Well, here's what you guys need to know. You know, we're going to keep you in touch with where things are going so that you guys can plan. We're heading towards this thing called sustainable development. And here, in order to get ahead of the curve, here's what you need to know. You can actually make tons of money on sustainable development and solar panels and wind panels if you get in early enough. If you get in early enough, I'll give you some information so that Walmart can succeed. And you can get ahead of the curve. And you can lead the way. And, you know, your stores can grow. That's what I see happening. I don't know if you guys see it the same way, but that's how I see things playing out.
Yeah. Yeah, and it makes sense, even though solar panels, which, you know, California solar panels, I think in one or more than one instance have been found to ignite birds in mid-flight. I mean, think about that, okay?
Yes.
You know,
and the corruption behind the solar companies and the bankruptcy,
right. Solyndra,
and where did the money go?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
exactly.
And the wind turbines, another example, you know, that we're not being told the truth. And all the, I taught college students today on government, and I got chewed up and spit out by these students, let me tell you, because they all have been indoctrinated that global warming is real, man is causing it, cattle are bad, we need wolves on the landscape to eat the overpopulation of cattle, even though, you know, these students are everything
tell.
They touch. our you know, livestock.
So, go ahead. Do tell. You spoke at a college class, and these still snot nosed, green behind the ears kids have been so indoctrinated into this culture of corruption and madness that they said, oh, you know, so they were. Why am I not surprised? But okay.
Yeah, what are some of the things that these kids are being taught?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it was great to have. Yeah, it was so great. My mom happens to be in town with me right now, and before I go off to another conference and speak to a large group of women about a lot of these same topics, Trump and what's happened, what will happen with Agenda 21 under Trump. Let me tell you, nothing, guys. It's not going away. It's marching very quickly, and it has to, because if Trump wins again, then we have 8 years to try and stop this thing called Agenda 21, but it's so infiltrated into almost every area of our life, like I say with Walmart. But anyway, so it's been great to have my mom here, because I share it, go back and share these stories with my family, and they're like, no, I can't believe it. I mean, they can believe it, right? But my mom got to see it firsthand today. Every year I'm invited back, and I hope this continues, to speak at my alma mater. It's Notre Dame de Namur. It's a private Catholic college in Belmont, California. And it's one of those schools where almost anybody can get into it. I mean, it's not that hard to get into. It's not an easy school once you're there, but it's not, you know, it's a school that really, really, really wants to grow and be on the map. And so for, while I was there, you know, almost anybody could get in, but the work was hard, and they did things like evidence-based management. And then I got my master's there, and, but I also ran for Congress, and I don't know that the school has ever had any, it's a small school, I don't know that they've ever had anybody run for Congress. And I'm pretty darn sure that if I ran as a Democrat, they would be inviting me back all the time. But one of the teachers who deserves an award wants her students to hear the other side. She happened to be my history teacher when I was a freshman at the college. And by the way, I was a very late adult learner. I didn't graduate when I was younger. I just didn't know what I wanted to do, and went off and did a whole bunch of other things and worked for biotech and all these different other companies and became a corporate event planner. And then I decided, okay, it's time to get my degree. So I got my bachelor's at age 40 or 42, I can't remember, and my master's like around 44, somewhere in there. And then, you know, and then I was very devoted to my studies. And one thing that I was known for and am still known for at that school is standing up to these teachers and going toe-to-toe with the students, because I'm not going to be indoctrinated, and I'm not going to, you know, let other students. I want people to see the other side. I want people to think. I want people to be critical thinkers, and because it impacts me too. You know, if we're heading down this road of climate change hoax and everything else. Well, anyway, after I ran for Congress in 2012, I went to the Rio Earth Summit in 2012. This instructor said, "You know, Debbie, I want you to come back and teach the students like what it was like to run for Congress." So what I taught them was about Agenda 21. I briefly said, you know, this is what it was like to run for Congress. You should do it. But then I went into Agenda 21, and this teacher had no idea what Agenda 21 was. And as a government history teacher, she actually was like, whoa, I can't believe this is happening. And so we had conversations, and she said, you know, I'd like you to come teach again. So I have taught since 2012, 13, 14, 15. So she's brought me back 6 years in a row, I think 6 years. And it's, in my opinion, the only opportunity these students have to actually hear the other side of what, Debbie? They're being taught, and this is in their textbooks, regionalism. Hitler did regionalism. Smart growth. Smart growth is full-on United Nations Agenda 21. Smart sustainable communities, the smart grid, smart meters, all of that to connect us, right? I know I'm preaching to the choir here, so to speak. But, you know, for this big global citizenry connection where we're all connected and we all impact each other even when we breathe. So this is what these students are being taught. I take the liberty of going to the bookstore to see what other books are in these college bookstores. And it's extraordinary. And I think that if, I think communities, I think parents and aunts and uncles should be doing the same just so they can, you know, offset, hopefully offset, like a carbon offset, I guess, offset what the heck these guys are learning. So some of the things, Joe, that they were saying today were, that they checked out my cowboy boots and said, well, your boots had an impact on the other side of the world. And I was like, okay, wait a minute.
They're about to have an impact on someplace else, let me tell you.
Go ahead. Yeah, and I, so, you know, because they, this one person in particular was really, I mean, she was really in your face. In fact, at once, so here I am, the invited speaker. I'm the invited guest. All semester long, they are learning about regionalism, shared resources, floods. In fact, last week they watched Leonardo DiCaprio's film Before the Flood, before, you know, in preparation of this, of my coming to teach them the other side. So, and in that film, I haven't seen it, but it's all about, I asked the students if it talked about how bad, you know, that if cows are bad for the environment. And they're like, oh, yeah, cattle are bad for the environment. And mind you, I just spent this week, earlier this week, teaching second, third, fourth, fifth, and sixth graders about how great agriculture and cattle are for the environment and all the byproducts that we use. So you have these little, you know, smarty pants adult learners who think that because of watching a documentary by a very wealthy hypocrite, that because of who DiCaprio is in the world, you know, a very famous figure, and then, and I tried to make this point to them, and then you have someone like me who doesn't get paid to do this. This has become my life, to research this stuff, to go to the United Nations conferences, to read, you know, thousands and thousands of pages of boring documents just to find that smoking gun. Just the smoking gun to say, you guys, look, this is really what this plan is about, and we already know what the plan is about when you start putting things together. Which, you know, of course, they were like, you know, the earth is overpopulated, there's too many cattle, we are harming the earth. And it's really, you know, at one point, I did start to, I cried, I teared up, my, I didn't cry, but I teared up, and well, I guess I cried because when you cry, you have tears coming down your face. But they weren't rolling down my face like they do sometimes when I get in really big trouble. But anyway, so you've got, you know, I'm so, like, just sad for these kids that they just, these students, they're adults, they're not kids, that they would give away their power. They would give away their power to people like Al Gore, who's making bank, who doesn't give a hoot about them. And here you have a student, you know, a former student like me showing up, taking my time to show up to their class to say, you guys deserve better than what you're getting. You deserve the truth. You're not getting it. And I'm here to tell you, you deserve it. And the more you give away your power, well, then, you know, the comment came back, well, there's poor people and there's people without health care. What do you think about Trump and his health care? And I said to him, we haven't seen it roll out yet. But, you know, here's what comes to mind right now. There are so many opportunities for us to educate others. We have to educate. We have to communicate. And what I see all too often is people hibernating and just saying, you know, I'm not going to make a difference. I know I touched a few students in there today. I know that as soon as I said, you guys, I watched Inconvenient Sequel, I even met Al Gore in person, and I said, you know what? I look for things in these movies, in these documentaries that make me go, really? So one of the examples I use in Inconvenient Sequel is Al Gore, you know, is all very proud that he comes from this big farming family, right? I think they were chicken farmers. And And we get to go in his home in this film, Inconvenient Sequel. We get to go, we fly to the, you know, with Al Gore. We follow Al Gore all through this movie, because this movie is really about Al Gore and his tireless effort to wake the world up about global warming and climate change and, you know, becoming a better global citizen through sustainable development. And when we go into Al Gore's house, he's reminiscing. There's old pictures on the wall of his family and how proud he is that they were, you know, farmers and ranchers and whatever else. And you look around in his you know, you can see we're in a bedroom, somebody's bedroom in this farmhouse, and everything is white. The carpet's white, the curtains are white, the marble on the counter is white, the bedspread's white, the pillars are white, the chairs are white, everything's white. I don't know one farmer. I don't know a farmer who, a true farmer who has so much white furniture. In fact, most of our furniture is wood and brown. But anyway, I just brought that up with the students, and I know that something clicked. I know that they're like, okay. And that little, like, that little piercing in their thought process to me was an opportunity to say, okay, where else do we see some hypocrisy in some of these people? Which opens
and Debbie,
up, well, yeah, they fly up. Yeah.
If I can just jump in here, with your opportunity to talk to these children, something that we're seeing in the political climate and debate in this country is the lack of intellectual debate and discussion, you know, especially when it comes to politics. But I wanted to know from you, in some of the resistance that you were getting trying to get your message across, did you see a lot of students, you know, if sometimes when people can't intellectually debate, they shut down, resort to name calling and things like that. Were these students, and have these students been open to suggestions, comments, changes, or have you seen more of, it's not the way I believe, so I'm going to kind of shut out what you're saying?
Yeah, great question. I think that oftentimes we see that they're already shut down. You know, half the time, today's class was actually one of the best that I've experienced. Why? Because they were actually engaging with me. Even though some of it, you know, there was the head shaking and the laughing, and at one point they're pointing out at my boots, and I could see under the breath. Yeah, I wonder what her carbon footprint on those boots are, and you know, that was, so you can see that kind of stuff going on. And but you know, the more it's like water off a duck's back. I don't let it bother me like I used to, and you know, practice, and. I actually get really excited to be invited to come speak and teach. And then the week before, 2 weeks before, I start to get really nervous, and I'm like, why did I do this? Why did I say yes? And then the night before, I'm usually up all night. Usually I won't sleep because I'm tweaking my PowerPoint and tweaking, you know, my message, because I really, really am so passionate about this. And I think that, to me, the talking to the students and just seeing the abuse of indoctrination, you know, Hitler said, he who owns the youth gains the future. And the abuse of this, of the 2030 agenda, the abuse of telling these kids, these students, these adult learners that, you know, just because you're breathing, you're impacting planet Earth. The guilt we all have to carry around, right? In this climate change, global warming story, whether you believe it or not, to me, it's abusive. It's mentally stressful. It's, and farmers and ranchers who are saying, you know, what regulation is going to pop up next on my water under the Clean Water Act, or, you know, under some new sustainability measure do we have to comply to? You know, what wolf is going to be released? How many more wolves? Those kinds of things. You know, the stress that people go through these days, to me, is unnecessary. It is government on our back versus government on our side, which is, you know, how my grandparents, you know, were mostly experienced the United States of America as a, you know, I'm sixth generation cattle rancher. My grandparents, you know, didn't experience this heavy hand. You know what? Which reminds me, one of the students at the end of today, and it's really fascinating just to be in front of students and student learners who are talking about global warming and climate change and trying to get into, like, how do you pierce that? It's an honor, and I hope that I can encourage some of your listeners and your followers to think about ways that they can start presenting to students and, you know, whether it's reading in a library. I don't know what it is. For me, I just created these opportunities just because I have a big mouth. I'm Chatty Cathy and Debbie Downer all in one. I think it's just such a great honor to speak to these children and, or these students and to figure out how you can get in. One of the students at the very end of the class, like all my presentations usually go, they usually go long. And so some of the students left, and there was a student who stayed after, and she said, my family are cattle ranchers in Mexico. And she said, I totally agree with what you've said today. She said, we can shoot wolves. Well, in California, in the protected wolves that we have now, if you shoot or honk or you disturb or disrupt these wolves and you're caught doing it, you can go to jail and you could be fined anywhere, you know, up to $100,000. And she said, you know, in Mexico, we're more free in Mexico than we are in the United States. She says, we don't have government coming on. And my mom was like, oh my gosh, she's so right. And as she, yeah.
This is we're up against our top of the hour break, and this is a good point to break, but this is some very important things that you're talking about here, and we're going to continue in the next segment in the next hour to talk about this and how this will affect all of us, this far-reaching agenda that will, again, affect us all across the world. And we have a new Secretary General, head of the UN. I want to kind of get your ideas on what direction he plans on taking Agenda 2030. Folks, don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Just what kind of thriller predicts the future? In 3 days in the Belly of the Beast, Daniel Holdings wrote about the God Particle before CERN actually discovered the God Particle. In As the Darkness Falls, Daniel wrote about an Islamist terrorist confederacy that rose up out of Syria and declared a caliphate 3 years before ISIS was ever heard of. In his newest novel, Between the Veil, Daniel talks about a space between dimensions where supernatural beings can walk. He says that these novels are a warning from the Creator to his creation. Will war come to America? Will the world's economies collapse? Are we looking at increased earthquakes and volcanic activity? Will the United States fall into civil war? You can find all of Daniel's work at his website, danielholdings.com. That's danielholdings.com. All of these things and more are talked about in Daniel's books. To find out what's coming next, go to danielholdings.com.
Worldwide demand is making coconuts one of the highest-yielding cash crops available today. Coca-Cola, Pepsi, and many high-net-worth individuals have invested billions of dollars into coconuts for strong growth and solid long-term income. Yields could be as high as 18% or more per year. Capital appreciation and exceptional income for up to 60 long years would be an absolutely brilliant investment to pass on to future generations. Diversify wisely with direct ownership of fully managed coconuts on prime farmland close to the beautiful Costa Rican border. For more information, qualified accredited investors should go to profitsincoconuts.com or phone 855-888-6288. That's 855-888-6288. This announcement does not constitute an offer to sell securities or a solicitation of an offer to purchase. Offer made by prospectus only. 855-888-6288 or visit profitsincoconuts.com. Profitsincoconuts.com.
You may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood, a murder investigation based upon a true story by private investigator Douglas J. Hagman. Using the character Mark Stiles, Hagman takes you on a journey behind the scenes where the homicide becomes secondary to an underworld of satanic ritual abuse, child abduction, and even mind-controlled experimentation. For 5 years, a brutal killer remained on the loose, free to kill again. As Mark struggles to navigate the maze of bizarre twists and untangle a web of deeply hidden secrets kept by some of the most powerful and influential people in his community and beyond. Stained by Blood, Order your copy of this engaging novel today at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood.